Hey everyone, I'm Coach Al Lyman.
And I'm Dr. Kurt Strecker, and we are the experts behind Pursuit Athletic Performance, one of the nation's cutting-edge sports training companies with an outstanding reputation for getting athletes just like you stronger, more powerful, and faster, all while keeping you uninjured and in the game year after year.
Our weekly podcast will share honest, effective training tips and information, from the nuances of triathlon to the rigors of ultra running, as well as the latest in sports medicine and nutrition. Our goal is to explode the training myths and untruths marketed to athletes and to teach you how to truly unleash your ultimate potential. Be sure to subscribe for free updates of our proven strategies at pursuitathleticperformance.com. Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. I'm Coach Al with Doc Strecker. We hope you're all having a great day out there, and as always, we really appreciate you visiting us in our podcast. Doc, how are you doing today?
I'm fabulous, Coach. How are you?
I am doing fantastically well. You know, we had a gait analysis earlier this morning. I love connecting with athletes, and I love looking into someone's eyes and just seeing that look that says, please help me. Please help me. I want to do what I love, and I'm not able to because something hurts. I love connecting with those people, and I love sharing what we've learned that we know works. So how can we not have a great day when we're doing work like that, right?
That's all good stuff. It's kind of a fine line, too, you know, because sometimes we're talking to, we're having to get folks up in the mirror and say, look, these are the issues that need to be fixed. And sometimes people take them a little personally, but most of the time after a couple of seconds of digesting it, they wrap their brains around it and really get into the work, and the results are, the results speak for themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You should mention that because it was recently that I distributed an email that I got from a strength coach named Pat Flynn, who we're actually going to have on a future episode of our podcast, because Pat is a kettlebell instructor and a strength training expert. We've got some similar philosophies, and he's also got some different ways in which he thinks. But he relayed in one of his blog posts about how challenging it is to work with mentors and teachers that force us to look at ourselves in a critical way. And the truth is, I can think back on my background as a musician, and I'm sure you yourself, thinking about your days at school and how teachers are the same way. My music teachers, perhaps your professors, they really challenge us to examine ourselves, to look at ourselves, to question how we're doing something, to see if we could do it better. I think of it as this path of personal excellence. And at the end of the day, if any of us are going to grow, we've got to be willing to look at ourselves in a critical way. It's not easy. It's never easy. You know, even for me, after all of these years, sometimes someone will say something that'll kind of sting for a moment. I'll go, ouch, okay, so I guess I need to rethink how I'm saying that or how I'm doing it. But the truth is, I know I can grow more if I can just be willing to step back.
And that kind of runs right into today's topic, the off-season. We're going to talk about what we can do in the off-season, why the off-season is an important part of our training, and taking that approach of being able to look in the mirror and see what it is that needs to be fixed is an important piece of that.
That sounds great. So, yeah, the off-season. Why don't we start at the beginning? I mean, certainly during the course of our podcast today, I'd love to touch on swim, bike, and run and how those specific sports might be addressed in this off season or this period of time between the end of a race season and the beginning of the next, which depending on where you are on the globe can change in terms of the calendar year. But but you know, preparation equals performance, right? How many coaches have said that? The truth is how we handle this period of time is so critical for our success. If we want to have success in August, we got to do work in November, December, January, et cetera. That's really going to pay dividends. And what I would like to start with is right at the beginning, which is healing from some of the damage our bodies may have incurred through the racing and training season. Doc, talk about that for a second and that whole process.
Well, we have to remember that it takes time to heal, right? Even if we're without symptoms or have minor symptoms from an injury, it does take time to heal, right? I mean, we've talked about the fact that there's an acute inflammatory phase in the very beginning that lasts a couple of days, and then you've got some repair, which can last a couple of months, and then you go into remodeling, and remodeling that tissue can take up to a year. You know, when a football player tears an ACL, you know, these guys who do nothing but rehab when they're not on the field, you know, when they're coming back from an injury, everything they do is focused on, you know, fixing that broken tissue and getting them back on the field as fast as they possibly can. You know, that tendon or the ACL that's been replaced with a tendon or an allograft or however they're doing it, you know, that can be a year before it's as strong as it's going to be, and it's never going to be as strong as it was when it started life. So it does take time to get those tissues back to where they need to be. So this is a great time in the off season to say, look, I'm going to give my body a little break here. I'm going to let these tissues heal. I'm going to work on remodeling. If I've had a significant injury, certainly remodeling that tissue by doing the appropriate exercises. And then really hitting that reset button along those lines as well. You know, you've got to look at how you're moving and how your flexibility is. You've got to see if your hip flexors are shrunk up like raisins from all that time on the bike and all the time traveling and work and whatever it is. But to reevaluate your muscle lengths, start at the beginning, as you just described. You know, we always start our folks with the level one movement training. They use the stabilizer on the floor, and this is a great time to go back to that. Hit that reset button. Start to rebuild the foundation again. Look for places that it's not quite where it ought to be. Shore those up and get ready to build on that fitness.
You know, we actually, as an example, we had a team member come into the lab last week, and what he's doing is it actually represents exactly what you're talking about. So he had a really good season of racing that sort of wrapped with Ironman Canada. Mm-hmm. And our first recommendation was take some time away from some structured training, just rest, put your feet up a little bit, do anything other than swim, bike, and run, stay active, and keep moving. And then once you've felt a little bit of that mental rejuvenation, a week or two of just really relaxing and resting a little bit, he came into our lab and we reassessed his movement quality. Right, so we start at the beginning, see where he may be imbalanced, and then give him some work to readdress those balances. It's a little bit like rebooting the hard drive,
yeah,
right? It's like doing a disk defrag, rebooting everything, and starting from square one. You know, so many athletes fall into the trap of getting soft tissue treatment on a regular basis just to continue to move forward and participate, you know? If I don't get my weekly ART session, or if I don't see my massage therapist, I just don't feel good or feel right. And of course, soft tissue work can be a valuable component to any athletic training program, but it should not be or ever be that key element that keeps you on the field. Otherwise, it's a little bit like picking a scab.
That's exactly right. Picking a scab it is. You've got to take care of these things and get them to heal. Figure out what the root of the issue is, whether it's a muscle length imbalance, a strength issue, a stability issue. Figure out where those problems exist, identify them, pull them right out into the light, and fix them.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, moving forward, our philosophy as a team, which really forms the foundation of all the training that we do, is to move well, first and foremost, then get strong in a very, very functional way that really applies and converts to sport-specific strength and power development, then get fast, then take that speed relative to the distance that we ultimately want to race at and begin to go longer with it. That's our general philosophy, yes?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to use this off-season to begin to work on those specific things. And in that order, and I'll say before I even talk about specific sports, I will say as a coach that as I look back over many years and look at how a lot of athletes train, I think way too many people start to pour the intensity on in their training in the off season way too soon. You know, it's one thing to say, hey, I want to get fast and I want to get powerful and so forth and so on. That doesn't mean that in the first week in November you should be doing zone five, you know, 2 to 5 minute efforts on the bike, working as hard as you possibly can. If you haven't already addressed the movement issues you and I sort of just talked about, but also laid the foundation necessary to create a higher ceiling for that fitness down the road. Right? And skill development goes along with that. Now, when I talk about skill development, I'm not just talking about your swimming technique or that kind of thing. What I'm talking about are the skills that also relate to authentic human movement. For example, Doc, on the bike, it's really, really important in the off season, in my opinion, to do some flat pedal riding, if you can do it. Now, when I say flat pedal, I don't specifically mean to use a flat pedal. What I mean is take off those clipless shoes and just use your regular sneakers. Get back to pedaling the bike in an authentic way that doesn't involve an artificial scraping off the bottom of the shoe or pulling up over the top. These kinds of movements, in my opinion, are not authentic ways to pedal the bike and ultimately potentially overload the hip flexor. So doing some flat pedal riding and also some high cadence spinning just to enhance that neuromuscular coordination is critically important. And at a low load, these movements and skill practices on the bike don't have to be and ideally shouldn't be under high load. Because again, what are we training at this stage? We're really training the nervous system. We're laying that motor control. We're training the coordination that ultimately improves the wiring from the brain to the specific muscles that are necessary. So for example, if I'm a cyclist and I really want to develop in the off season how I should, if I start out with super, super, super high intensity work, I'm sort of inviting compensation right off the bat. I haven't addressed the movement quality. I haven't necessarily addressed how to enhance the coordination, and therefore at some point in time I'm short-circuiting my ability to raise that zone five even higher as the season goes along. And isn't that what it's really about, Doc? It's really about saying, hey, how good can I be? How good can this upcoming season be? And if I don't lay the foundation as I should during this off season, then I'm going to limit the potential for my growth down the road. And I guess what it all comes back to is patience, first of all, right? Everybody wants to jump right in with the hard stuff, right? Get me sweating. And I'll say to that, if you're not used to any flat pedal riding and you're used to being clipped in, try some of the fun drills that we do in our indoor class with a flat pedal and you'll be challenged.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, 30 minutes at 150 to 120 RPMs, that's a challenging session that'll get your heart rate up.
Absolutely.
So just a couple examples there.
Absolutely. You know, it's almost like you want to look at your training in more of a, you can almost think of it as Zen, right? It's not about how many repetitions can I do in a minute of X exercise. It's not about how many miles can I run. It's how well can I do those repetitions and how well can I execute the training. And those are the things. It's the journey. It's back to that process-oriented goals as opposed to, you know, that bucket needs 45 rocks in it, just get them in there as fast as you can, versus, you know, spending the time to do all of your movement correctly, to work through your flexibility, to work through your movement training, and develop that. And the more you develop good movement and good stability, obviously, you know, the less you're going to be injured and the faster you're going to go and the more you're going to be able to do this when you're 85 years old. And that's really where we're – that's the whole goal.
And the more you'll get out of the training that you actually do. You know, it's funny. When I began coaching, folks would ask me, you know, what am I really trying to do with an athlete that I work with? I want to save them a lot of trial and error. But I also want to help them maximize their training time and effort. And one of the things I learned from some good coaches that I worked with early on in my running and triathlon career was the truth is you don't need a lot of high-intensity work in a training program to get maximum benefit. Very often when I was looking at some really well-conceived, well-constructed, well-designed elite-level triathlon training programs, I'd find that in many sessions, I'd find as little as 10 minutes of high-intensity work in the course of a 60 to 90-minute training session. And initially, I'd think, wow, that's just way too little. You know, how is anybody going to get better doing that little percentage of high-quality work? The truth is, Doc, when the foundation is solid and when the individual is moving well and when skills are highly developed, a little sprinkling of intensity goes a heck of a long way. And that's something that I think enlightened athletes and coaches are well aware. And similarly, for those who are not enlightened, they just try to hammer themselves into oblivion for marginal improvements, all the while reducing their chance for longevity in whatever the activity is that they're doing. You know, if you can get the maximum benefit from hitting your head on the wall only 5 times, then why would you do it 50 times? You know right. What I mean?
Sure. Absolutely. It comes down to quality. You know, it comes down to quality again and really spending the time. So, you know, the take-home message today is identify your weaknesses. Take this time. Get healthy. Let your tissues heal. Identify your weaknesses. Identify your shortcomings. Don't be afraid to look in the mirror and be honest with yourself. And then address those. And again, you know, with our athletes, we have them send us a 30-second video clip on the treadmill, you know, or we do a Skype session and look at them in some of the strength and stability training work that they're doing. We look at their muscle lengths, and then they have a plan. You know, then they have a real focused plan. Get back to working on the frame so that it's there when you start pouring power on it from the motor.
Absolutely, Doc. And then along the same line, sport-specific skills.
Of course.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, as you know, I came into swimming as an adult, very late in life. And I very quickly learned when I started to study the sport that ultimately, as the great coach Hayden Woolley, a good friend and mentor of mine from New Zealand, told me, skill sets the upper limit to how far your fitness is going to take you. He helped me to understand, as other really good coaches that I've had also did, helped me to understand that if I continued to practice struggling with less than the best possible technique, then I wasn't going to get any better. I might feel better, feeling like I was working harder, and then I might tell everybody I just had a lot of bad luck because I never got any better, you know, when the truth is I never changed my technique. So I encourage every triathlete who's listening to this podcast, have the confidence and the belief in yourself and the willingness to commit to never taking another bad stroke. Use this off season to stop swimming badly. Because when your technique is not good, you will not get the benefit from those tens or hundreds of thousands of yards that you're committing to. We don't question, and I'll speak for myself, I don't question your work ethic. If you're listening to this, you know how to work. You love to work. You might even love to suffer. You have the commitment. That's not the problem. The problem is not having a willingness to step back and say, I'm going to do this the right way, and I'll only progress as much as my technique and skill will allow me. That's what I tell athletes. And when they follow that prescription, they get better. They get a lot better, potentially, if they're willing to step all the way through the process. So that's my sincerest encouragement for every listener.
So let's clarify that a little bit. You talked about never taking another bad stroke in the pool or in the open water. And that means if you get to the pool and you can only go 25 yards and keep your stroke together, that's how far you go.
Absolutely.
Right? You rest and you regroup and you start again. A lot of people will come in and say, well, I only swam 2,000 yesterday.
Yeah. Right? How many strokes is
that? Exactly.
Yeah, no, I mean...
And literally, you're saying stop.
Absolutely, Doc. I mean, the process we use here on our team is, and one I have utilized for as long as I've been coaching swimmers, is, first of all, understand what good stroke technique is. Learn. Become a student of the sport, first and foremost. In particular, I'm talking about the front end of the stroke. Secondly, learn the skills that are correct out of the water.
Dry land.
It just makes sense that if I can't do it on the pool deck, I'm not going to be able to do it when I'm swallowing chlorine and I can't get a breath. And my body's thinking I'm drowning. That's just not going to happen. Master the movements and the skill out of the water. Then third, take a few well-conceived drills that reinforce those skills into the pool and practice those. And when you become comfortable with those, then begin to apply those skills in a full stroke and do as many strokes as you can do correctly. As you say, it was 20 yards, but it could be five strokes.
Right.
If it's five strokes, that's what it is. Because if you can do five on Monday, you might be able to do six on Tuesday. You might be able to do eight on Thursday. You come back Monday, you can do 10. Guess what you just did? You went from five correct strokes to 10 correct strokes. And if you do that over the course of a few weeks, you'll get to that 25 yards you mentioned, and then you'll get to 100 yards. And maybe by the spring, you'll actually be able to do 2,000 yards where you won't be completely falling apart from a skill or technique perspective by the end of that swim session. Swimming well is certainly in a triathlon is about slowing down less. It's about becoming less efficient as the swim goes on, right? Everybody feels great for their first 10 strokes.
Yeah, that's right.
But in the second half of the race, everybody's swimming in a different direction because their elbows are dropping and they're crossing over at the midline and all kinds of stuff is happening. It's all about efficiency, and efficiency begins and ends with correct skill. I mean, it's simple. And, in our information age, gosh knows there's just a lot of good resources out there about how to learn how to swim better. So that's what I suggest. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I just wanted to clarify that for folks, because sometimes they'll come in and they'll say, well, yeah, I didn't run much this week. I only ran, 7 miles. So it's all relative, right?
Right, it is.
It's all relative.
Yeah.
And some great videos on our site with regard to the swimming using the VASA and some of the technique work that you put in there is really phenomenal. So, hit the reset button, folks. Pay attention to your shortcomings, address them, figure out what they are, and go right after them. Take this time, let your body heal, practice.
Yep, build a strong foundation and just keep rocking it from there. That sounds great. All right, Doc. Good talk today. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Have a great week. We'll be back next week with another episode. Let us know if you have any questions about any of the topics we're discussing. And if you have any specific questions that you'd like us to address, send them on to us at info@pursuitathleticperformance.com. Don't forget to check our website for some updates. If you need some help with your off-season, drop us a note. We are here for you. It's what we're passionate about, helping other athletes from around the world to be better and stronger and more injury-resistant and more resilient on the race course. We want you to have success. We want you to be better and happy doing what you love to do. So thanks for joining me today, Doc.
Thank you, Coach. Have a smiley day, everybody.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to the Pursuit Athletic Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating and review here on iTunes. Be sure to head over to pursuitathleticperformance.com to subscribe for free tips and strategies to help you get strong, get fast, and unleash the amazing athlete in you.